My name is Richard. I'm an addict. And, you know, when I came home from Vietnam in 1971, I was off the hook. I got my first taste of what I considered real drugs overseas. And when I came back, there wasn't anything in the United States that could match it. But I did what I had to do. I started working in a nightclub. And my job was to check the IDs at the door. And if you're around that time, you know, it was crazy. It was right after the riots in D.C. You had strong divisions between black and white. And I was raised, my parents were, they got religion in 1959. I was 9 years old, 10 years old. They started going to church. They were what I referred to at the time as holy rollers. And it was I considered it a roadblock in my life. We didn't have TV, but what they did do was they, when we went to the city, the churches that they really liked to go to were the black gospel churches. And I experienced then that it doesn't matter what color you are, people are people. My background as far as my family goes, cousins, they're from Kentucky, you know, where the separation between different cultures is extreme. And I rejected that. It left a dilemma in my life. It wasn't one of the reasons that I use, but it's one of the things that makes me who I am today. I started working in this nightclub. My wife had left me when I was in Vietnam, and I was going to show her. I really wanted to get her back. We had a two-year-old daughter. My idea of life was the white picket fence, 2.5 kids, and when she said she wanted a divorce, that crushed all that. It squashed it. I started using a lot more. My grades were affected in college, and I guess they called it schizophrenic, or they call it what now they call bipolar, was diagnosed as schizophrenic. So the medicine that the doctors prescribed wasn't working. I didn't use that. I preferred to be my own doctor. It's a little more expensive that way, and you often ran out. But it didn't matter. You did what you did to do to get it. I started dating a lot of different women, and it was easy back then because I was the guy that checked the IDs at the door. So someone came in that I got to know them, I got to see their ID, where they lived, I got to qualify them as they came in the door. And so by the end of the night, I had someone different each night to go home with, or they go home with me or whatever, and it was the three F's, find them and forget them. And it went on like that for several years. I graduated from college. I ran into someone who did the same thing to me. And I didn't like the feeling. I really didn't. The girl crushed my heart. And it allowed me time to think back and realize what I had been doing to all these other people. So I didn't make amends, but I kind of altered my behavior. I decided it was time to get married again. I met my second wife on October 31st at a nightclub in D.C. in Georgetown. And we were married on November 13th. It was a Friday. And we were divorced on April Fool's Day. So it was a fun run while it lasted. So I'm a little leery about getting married again. I have gone through a lot of relationships that were similar. But, you know, I've matured as time goes on. I'm in a very healthy relationship with a person that really cares for me, and I care for them. And it's we both agree right now that we're engaged, but we haven't set a date. That marriage is definitely in our future. However, we kind of see what marriage does to some people. And we think we fit that category, that as soon as we get married, we try to own each other. And my birthday's April the 11th, and so's hers. So it's kind of like, if you ever play with a magnet when you're a kid, you push it together and it's real hard, but you flip it around the other side and you can't pull it apart. It's like that. We're either can't get us together or you can't get us apart. But we care for each other dearly. And I think it's the accumulation of experience and knowledge that I've had in my life that has led to this monogamous relationship with this caring person. I find that recovery has been similar. I got clean in 1989. I was on methadone before that for a long period of time. And I first detoxed from methadone in 1985. It was an administrative detox. I thought my problem was heroin. And I wanted methadone because it was free. And I didn't have to use heroin if I was using the methadone. So it got to the point to where I got take home. And then I found that I could, with take-home, I could split my methadone, take half of it, and sell the rest. So I was the methadone dealer, you know, for a while until they started spotting cocaine in my urine and had to give that up. So that lasted for a while. I finally, asked for help early 1989, and they said, well, we'll put you in the hospital, we'll teach you some social skills, and if you follow the method, perhaps that you're going to, be able to become a productive member of society again. And I was all for it. So I went through a treatment program, and I thought last time I was in the hospital, I had nurses take care of me. They would bring me food when I needed it. And this was nothing like that. They shaved my head first day. They took away my cologne. And they made us all walk in straight lines. So I went through the Venata program. I don't know if anyone's familiar with it, at the VA hospital. When I got out of treatment, it was... I was scared because I had been clean for a period of time, but only as a result of being away from it and being in direct contact with people who were actively practicing recovery. So I was really afraid that once I got out of treatment, I was going to use. So I followed a suggestion. I went to a meeting, and when they said burning desire, I didn't really know what that meant, but I raised my hand and I says, I just got out of treatment. I really don't know if I'm going to be able to stay clean or not. And they said, just come back tonight. You know, it was a noon meeting. Just make your way back. I got home and cleaned out the car. You know, I had a set of works underneath the horn button, and the speaker buttons had cookers in it. So it took me a while to clean out the car. And I finally got rid of the cans, you know, the 110 cans that had little holes poked in them. I got all those out and filled up a big trash can. And I found this big cellophane bag full of a white powder. And I looked at it, and my first thought was, is it dope or cane? And it scared me so bad, I threw it in the trash, and I kept looking at my hands to see if it was stuck or not. But I went to a meeting that night, and I shared that experience, and it was like something, a weight that was lifted off of me. I realized that if I have a problem, and I'm able to kind of identify the problem and talk about it and get it up off of me, the way of share that we have in here of sharing a problem, it really works. It worked for me that night, and I practiced that principle to the best of my ability. Through the steps. The first three steps were, you know, discovery. I realized that, you know, who and what I am. And what I really must do to cause it not to happen. Because if I don't do what is necessary in my life, I'm going to use. I'm an addict. Regardless how long I've been clean, if I get around it and I get the right feeling, I'm going to talk myself into it. I'm a compulsive person by nature. So what I have to do, I have to do things in my life that cause it not to happen. You know, that's what prevention is. I learned a lot about myself in step 4, 5, and 6. 7, 8, and 9. Tried to clear up some of the wreckage of my past. And in doing the steps were at first were difficult for me the first time I went through 1 through 12 because I thought each step you had to do perfect. I looked over words like we tried. You know, when you try to do something, you're just doing the best you can. I thought, well, you got to do it, you know. And so it was difficult for me to follow the direction of my sponsor and move on to the next step. When I got to 10, 11, and 12, I had a sponsor that went through the same program that I did. He had a substantial amount of clean time, great friend of mine, and we used to have meetings in his house before he moved out of the neighborhood. We would have step meetings. We would go through the steps and talk about our experiences of that week and that day and how they may apply to the steps. There was a lot of times where I tried the 10th step guide where you write down your feelings of that day. And for me, that didn't work. I really couldn't apply it because I wouldn't think about how I felt until the episode was long over. But I did the best I could. Now I can sometimes drive down the street, and if a cab driver cuts me off, and I want to kill him, and I mean kill them. I kind of like realize that I need to work on my anger issues, and that's God putting someone in my life to show me what I need to work on. So how can I harm someone who God is working through to help me. I try to keep that focus in mind, and it helps me through life. It helps me deal with anger issues, deal with other people. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Again, I said I'm very impulsive. I have a tendency to rage, but I'm getting better. I used drugs for a long time. And when I got into treatment, it was, look out, here comes Richard, he's off his medication. But I found that the steps and being around people who are actively practicing recovery gives me the opportunity to find that as a real form of what helps. It's when I got to step 11, I talked about it talks about being powerful. Or power, gaining power. You have praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. A lot of people don't realize when you get a lot of clean time, it doesn't matter if you're working a program or not. If you're around newcomers, you're going to gain a certain amount of power because you're going to be able to lead them and to show them how you live. And that's going to reflect on their recovery. So we have to realize the responsibility of our actions. When we get to the point to where we're sitting around acting as a role model for people that are newer in recovery, younger people, people in the community that may need help throughout life, we have to take that responsibility because you have power over them. If I say, yeah, what the heck, you know, I mean, it doesn't matter, then they're going to carry that out. And even if they don't, you know, even if they discount what I have to say, as they well should, it doesn't help me in the process. And the purpose of working the steps is to my advantage. I have had several spiritual awakenings. The first one was when my wife said, you know, I gave her this big long story about how I wanted that white picket fence, how I wanted the family to come together, and that I'd do what was necessary to make that happen. And she said, the hell with that, I want a divorce. Yeah, that's a spiritual awakening. As I said before, it's that and other experiences has led me to a healthy relationship that I have today. The message that we have for other addicts is ourselves. It's not what we say. I can get up here and talk about how great NA is, how great my life is, and I got some really great things to talk about that are happening in my life. But that really doesn't matter. What you have to, what you really see is how I act, what I do, how I carry myself, how I interact with people, and that's what really matters. The important thing about step 12 for me and throughout the steps, but especially step 12, is we tried. If we give things our best effort, you know, we tried to carry this message. As long as we provide that effort, I think this program works. I can go on and on. But the bottom line is, keep coming back. Thanks.